back. VOA 1, the hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Brian Lynn, Anna Mateo, and John Russell. Later, we will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Brian Lynn.
Belarus and Argentina have launched mass COVID-19 vaccination campaigns using the Russian-developed Sputnik V shots. They are the first countries outside Russia to release the vaccine. The first doses of the Sputnik V vaccine arrived in the former Soviet Republic of Belarus on Tuesday, officials from Russia and Belarus confirmed. A statement by the Belarusian Health Ministry said the first vaccines would be given to medical workers and teachers, as well as others whose jobs require them to come in contact with many people. Individuals will have the right to refuse the vaccine if they wish, the statement added. Hours later, a similar campaign launched in Argentina. The country has so far received 300,000 doses, which officials say will be free and voluntary. President Alberto Fernandez called it the largest vaccination effort in the country's modern history. Medical workers in Argentina were first to receive the Russian-made vaccine. Next in line for the vaccine will be teachers, those with high-risk medical conditions, and people over the age of 60. The Russian-made vaccine requires people to get two shots. Another 19.7 million doses are set to arrive in January and February. Argentina, a country of 45 million people, has recorded nearly 1.6 million cases of COVID-19 and nearly 43,000 deaths. Belarus has reported nearly 190,000 confirmed cases and about 1,400 deaths since the start of the pandemic. But many in the Eastern European nation of 9.4 million people suspect the government is manipulating the count to hide the true numbers. Belarus carried out its own tests with Sputnik V among 100 volunteers and approved the vaccine for use on December 21st. Argentina approved the shots 2 days later. Russia was widely criticized for approving the vaccine in August for use within Russia after it was tested on only a few dozen people. A large-scale study involving tens of thousands of people started shortly after the vaccine received Russian government approval. Russian health officials decided to start offering Sputnik V to people in high-risk groups, such as medical workers and teachers, within weeks of approval. Mass vaccinations with Sputnik V started in Russia this month, even though the vaccine has not yet completed large-scale testing. Belarus expects to vaccinate around 200,000 people with Sputnik V in the first part of its national program, health ministry officials say. Belarus President Alexander Lukashenko has faced months of demands by protesters to resign after an August election they say was fraudulent. He has mainly dismissed COVID-19. His opinions about the pandemic have angered many Belarusians and have fueled continued criticism about his leadership style. Opposition politicians say Lukashenko's government has permitted COVID-19 to spread uncontrollably in jails where thousands of protesters are detained. I'm Brian Lynn.
So far this year in San Francisco, 621 people have died of drug overdoses. This is a record. It is also far greater than the number of COVID-19 deaths in the California city. As of December 27th, that number is 182. The main cause of the drug crisis is the powerful painkiller fentanyl. But the number of overdoses would be far higher without the use of an overdose-reversing medication called Narcan. The drug can be sprayed up the nose to quickly bring someone out of an overdose. The medication was used nearly 3,000 times from January to mid-November to save overdose victims, the San Francisco Chronicle and Associated Press reported. Last year, San Francisco reported 441 overdose deaths, a 70% increase from 2018. And 2019 saw 2,610 possible overdoses prevented by Narcan. The data comes from the city's medical examiner and the Drug Overdose Prevention and Education Project, called DOPE for short. DOPE is a city-funded program that works with San Francisco to carry out its overdose prevention efforts. People who use Narcan are urged to report to DOPE on the number of times they use the drug on overdose victims. The group also records the number of times people return to the program to refill their supply of Narcan. Because this information is largely self-reported, the actual numbers are thought to be higher. San Francisco's overdose crisis worsened when fentanyl hit the city's drug supply. Fentanyl can be 50 to 100 times stronger than the pain medication morphine. The coronavirus pandemic has also worsened the situation. City services, such as housing help and drug treatment, have been disrupted. Nearly 40% of the deaths were reported in two downtown neighborhoods. However, the drug crisis has touched every part of the city. Many people overdosed in low-income apartment buildings and in city-funded hotel rooms for the homeless. Others died alone on sidewalks, in alleyways, and in parks around the city. I'm Ana Mateo.
Imagine you are studying English. Perhaps you are learning new words or expressions. But then you feel the need to check your phone. Perhaps you look on social media. You return to your studies, only to look again at your phone a short time later. This process, when repeated many times, could reduce your ability to learn new material. It is what you might call a bad habit, a custom or repeated action that has a negative effect on you or your goals. Today on Education Tips, we will explore how you can break bad habits, such as repeatedly checking your phone. In an earlier Education Tips story, we explored habits. Habits are ways of dealing with issues in your environment. You often do not think about them. In the earlier report, we discussed how habits are made. Now, a quick reminder for you. James Clear, in his book Atomic Habits, describes a four-step process by which habits are made. These steps are cue, craving, response, and reward. A cue is a signal. It tells your brain to do something, to begin a behavior. A craving is a desire for something. The response, or reaction, is the habit that you perform. The response gives you a reward. Rewards are the end goal of every habit, Clear writes. In our cell phone example, the cue is seeing the cell phone. The craving is the desire or urge to check your phone. The response is checking your phone. The reward might be seeing something interesting on social media, for example. James Clear notes that to break bad habits, you need to think about each step in the habit-making process. To break a habit, he writes, you should think about making the bad habit invisible, unattractive, difficult, and unsatisfying. To make your phone invisible, you could hide it away. To make it unattractive, you could think about why it is a good idea to stop checking the phone. To make phone use difficult, you can increase the space between you and your phone. To make your phone unsatisfying, you could make a habit contract. For example, you could ask a family member to watch your behavior and point out when you check your phone. You could promise to pay that person every time you look at the device while you are studying. Wendy Wood is a psychologist and an expert on habits. In the book Good Habits, Bad Habits, she offers some ideas on how people can cut back on their cell phone use. One suggestion is to wear a wristwatch. This will limit at least one reason for looking at the phone, checking the time. Wood notes the importance of increasing the number of steps you need to take in order to use your cell phone. Silence it. Turn it off. Switch on your phone's Do Not Disturb mode, she writes. She adds that you can move your phone to a place that is more difficult to reach. For example, you can put your phone inside a backpack. Wood also suggests another way to think about cell phone use. She says you can add a new healthy habit onto your cell phone habit. What about if every time you check your phone, you call one member of your family just to say hello and have a quick chat? She asks. Finally, Wood suggests one kind of reward you could give yourself for not looking at your phone. Reading a good book. Today we discussed ideas for reducing your cell phone use, but you can use these ideas to break other behaviors. The important thing to remember is that people can change their habits, but they must think carefully about their surroundings or environment. You might decide to stop doing an action, but if such an action is very easy for you to do, you will probably continue doing it. Habit changes take time, but with patience, planning, and repetition, you can do it. I'm John Russell.
To help protect yourself against the new coronavirus, wash your hands for 20 seconds with soap and water before you eat, after using the toilet, and after touching anything many other people touch, like a seat on a public bus. If you cannot wash your hands with soap and water, use an alcohol-based hand sanitizer that contains at least 60% alcohol. Taking these steps can help prevent not only the new coronavirus disease, but also colds, flu, and other viruses. For more information, visit the following websites: the World Health Organization at www.who.int or the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention at www.cdc.gov.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. The Spanish-American War took place in the late 1800s during the administration of President William McKinley. Harry Monroe and Kay Gallant tell the story of that war.
Unlike other presidents of the late 1800s, William McKinley spent much of his presidency dealing with foreign policy. The most serious problem involved Spain. Spain ruled Cuba at that time. Cuban rebels had started a fight for independence. The Spanish government promised the Cuban people equal rights and self-rule, but in the future. The rebels did not want to wait. President McKinley felt Spain should be left alone to honor its promises. He also felt responsible for protecting the lives and property of Americans in Cuba. When riots broke out in Havana, he ordered the battleship Maine to sail there. One night in early 1898, a powerful explosion sank the Maine. More than 250 American sailors died. There was some evidence the explosion was caused by an accident in the ship's fuel tanks, but many Americans blamed Spain. They demanded war to free Cuba and make it independent.
President McKinley had a difficult decision to make. He did not want war. As he told a friend, "I fought in our Civil War. I saw the dead piled up. I do not want to see that again." But McKinley also knew many Americans wanted war. If he refused to fight Spain, his Republican Party could lose popular support. So he did not ask Congress for a declaration of war right away. He sent a message to the Spanish government instead. McKinley demanded an immediate ceasefire in Cuba. He also offered his help in ending the revolt. By the time Spain agreed to the demands, McKinley had made his decision. He asked Congress for permission to use military force to bring peace to Cuba. Congress agreed. It also demanded that Spain withdraw from Cuba and give up all claims to the island. The president signed the congressional resolution. The Spanish government immediately broke relations. On April 25, 1898, the United States declared war on Spain.
The American Navy was ready to fight. It was three times bigger than the Spanish Navy. It also was better trained. A shipbuilding program begun 15 years earlier had made the American Navy one of the strongest in the world. Its ships were made of steel and carried powerful guns. Part of the American Navy at that time was based in Hong Kong. The rest was based on the Atlantic coast of the United States. Admiral George Dewey commanded the Pacific Fleet. Dewey had received a message from the Assistant Secretary of the Navy, Theodore Roosevelt. If war broke out, it said, he was to attack the Spanish naval force in the Philippines. The Spanish force was commanded by Admiral Patricio Montojo.
The American fleet arrived in Manila Bay on May 1st. It sailed toward the line of Spanish ships. The Spanish fired first. The shells missed. When the two naval forces were 5,000 meters apart, Admiral Dewey ordered the Americans to fire. After 3 hours, Admiral Montojo surrendered. Most of his ships were sunk. 400 of his men were dead or wounded. American land forces arrived several weeks later. They captured Manila, giving the United States control of the Philippines.
Dewey was suddenly a hero. Songs and poems were written about him. Congress gave him special honors. A spirit of victory spread across the nation. People called for an immediate invasion of Cuba. Unlike the Navy, America's army was not ready to fight. When war was declared, the army had only about 25,000 men. Within a few months, however, it had more than 200,000. The soldiers trained at camps in the southern United States. One of the largest camps was in Florida. Cuba is just 150 kilometers off the coast of Florida.
2 weeks after the Spanish-American War began, the Army sent a small force to Cuba. The force was ordered to inspect the north coast of Cuba and to take supplies to Cuban rebels. That invasion failed. But the second one succeeded. 400 American soldiers landed with guns, bullets, and supplies for the rebels. Next, the Army planned to send 25,000 men to Cuba. Their goal was the port of Santiago on the south coast. American ships had trapped a Spanish naval force there earlier. One of the commanders of the big American invasion force was Theodore Roosevelt. Roosevelt had resigned as Assistant Secretary of the Navy when the war started. He organized a group of horse soldiers. Most of the men were cowboys from America's Southwest. They could ride and shoot well. Some were rich young men from New York who simply shared Roosevelt's love of excitement. The group became known as Roosevelt's Rough Riders.
As the Americans landed near Santiago, Spanish forces withdrew to positions outside the city. The strongest force was at San Juan Hill. the Spanish soldiers used smokeless gunpowder. This made their artillery hard to find. The Americans did not have the smokeless powder, but they had Gatling machine guns, which poured a stream of bullets at the enemy. When the machine guns opened fire, American soldiers began moving up San Juan Hill. Several American reporters watched. Later, one of them wrote this report. "I have seen many pictures of the charge on San Juan Hill, but none seem to show it as I remember it. In the pictures, the men are running up the hill quickly in straight lines. There seem to be so many men that no enemy could stand against them." "In fact," said the reporter, "there were not many men, and they moved up the hill slowly, in a close group, not in a straight line. It seemed as if someone had made a terrible mistake. One wanted to call to these few soldiers to come back."
The American soldiers were not called back. They reached the top of San Juan Hill. The Spanish soldiers fled. "All we have to do," an American officer said, "is hold on to the hill, and Santiago will be ours." American Commander General William Shafter sent a message to Spanish Commander General José Toral. Shafter demanded Toral's surrender. While he waited for an answer, the Spanish naval force tried to break out of Santiago Harbor. The attempt failed, and the Americans took control of the port. The loss destroyed any hope that Spain could win the war. There was now no way it could send more soldiers and supplies to Cuba. General Toral agreed to a short ceasefire so women and children could leave Santiago. But he rejected General Shafter's demand of unconditional surrender. American artillery then attacked Santiago. General Toral defended the city as best he could. Finally, on July 17th, he surrendered. The United States promised to send all his soldiers back to Spain.
In the next few weeks, American forces occupied Puerto Rico and the Philippine capital of Manila. America's war with Spain was over. It had lasted just 10 weeks. The next step was to negotiate terms of a peace treaty. The negotiations would be held in Paris. The victorious United States demanded independence for Cuba. It demanded control over Puerto Rico and Guam, and it demanded the right to occupy Manila. The two sides agreed quickly on the terms concerning Cuba, Puerto Rico, and Guam, but they could not agree on what to do about the Philippines. Spain rejected the American demand for control. It did not want to give up this important colony. Negotiations on this point of the peace treaty lasted for days.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.